Contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Boot computer, list of today's guests, signing in chat room, lining up news articles, checking levels, adjusting camera, secure wire connection, restart computer, checking video feed.
With all she's got to do, you'd think Nicole Sandler was a one-woman band. Well, she is, and she's ready for another show. And now, here's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
We targeted a system of tunnels and caves that ISIS fighters used to move around freely, making it easier for them to target U.S. military advisors and Afghan forces in the area. The United States takes the fight against ISIS very seriously, and in order to defeat the group, we must deny them operational space, which we did. The United States took all precautions necessary to prevent civilian casualties and collateral damage as a result of the operation. Any further details, I would refer you to the Department of Defense on that.
A short time ago, the U.S. Air Force dropped a 21,000-pound bomb in eastern Afghanistan, the first use ever of this weapon in combat. This is a weapon called the Massive Ordnance Air Blast Bomb. It was dropped in eastern Afghanistan in Nangarhar province against a complex of ISIS tunnels, personnel that had been assembling in that area of Nangarhar. The U.S. military had this weapon in development for years, but now today, just a few hours ago, dropping the bomb in combat, according to U.S. officials, for the first time ever. This massive 21,000-pound bomb, we have video we're showing of the testing of the bomb, but again, not used in combat until today, we are told. This is such a heavy bomb, such a large bomb. It is put in the back of a cargo plane, a special operations cargo plane, and basically pushed out the back of it. Now they've dropped it on this ISIS complex of fighters in eastern Afghanistan. This is an area where just a few days ago, a U.S. special operations soldier was killed in action in a firefight with ISIS fighters. It's an area the U.S. has been trying to go after to clear ISIS out of there. An extraordinary use of this weapon, to put mildly how seriously the U.S. Air Force takes this bomb. The official name is the Massive Ordnance Air Blast Bomb, MOAB, MOAB. The nickname inside the Air Force for this, quite seriously, is the Mother of All Bombs.
Get it? MOAB, Mother of All Bombs. Oh, my God. So if it's Thursday, oh, it's another bomb strike. But this one, you know, forget everything about Syria. This one has nothing to do with Syria. This was aimed at ISIS, at one subset of ISIS. In fact, here's the statement from the headquarters, United States Forces, Afghanistan in Kabul. dated April 13th, 2017. It reads, at 7:32 p.m. local time today, U.S. forces, Afghanistan, conducted a strike on an ISIS-K tunnel complex in Achin District, Nangarhar Province, Afghanistan, as part of ongoing efforts to defeat ISIS-K in Afghanistan in 2017. The strike used a GBU-43 bomb dropped from a U.S. aircraft. The strike was designed to minimize the risk to Afghan and U.S. forces conducting clearing operations in the area while maximizing the destruction of ISIS-K fighters and facilities. All ISIS-K losses have mounted. As ISIS-K losses have mounted, they are using IEDs, bunkers, and tunnels to thicken their defense, said General John W. Nicholson, commander, U.S. Forces Afghanistan. This is the right munition to reduce these obstacles and maintain the momentum of our offensive against ISIS-K. U.S. forces took every precaution to avoid civilian casualties with this strike. U.S. forces will continue offensive operations until ISIS-K is destroyed in Afghanistan. Ooh, there's a phone number over there. Boy, every ounce of me wants to call this number, but then, you know, then I'm playing with fire. I don't really need that kind of stuff coming back on me. But, you know, if I was not so worried about what this dump administration could do to an innocent civilian, I would call them and ask how they're feeling right now, which has to be the dumbest question any reporter ever asks a person when they stick a microphone in their face. But I thought that's what's fitting them. By the way, I've got an MSNBC screen grab up on my computer here. You know what? I can sort of bring it up, I think. Let me do it this way. And I'll show it to you on the YouTube if I can. Give me a second here, as I move things around on the screen. Ah, it's not exactly what I want to show you. Here we go. I think this works. Yeah. Hello. I want to make sure I've got audio there. So the Chiron, and there's the picture of the MOAB, I guess, being ferried to the cargo plane that's going to drop it. And the Chiron reads, breaking news, White House. Oh, and we get the bomb sound effect to go along with it. I really didn't play anything. I'm going to turn that down. White House military took all precautions to avoid civilian casualties in Afghan bombing. Does that make you feel better? I hope so, because the other day, apparently they didn't. See, we only hear about some of these bomb drops, you know, and isn't it interesting that when all the talk of, you know, the media just salivating over a dump, getting all militaristic on us, and they talk about the bombs that he dropped on the airstrip in Syria as his first major incursion into military. No, it wasn't. That was when, over dinner, he and Jared and whatever other buddies were dining with them at the, I was going to say, at the health department flagged Mar-a-Lago. I don't know that that's where it happened, but the kitchen at Mar-a-Lago has been flagged numerous times for a lot of dirty kitchen stuff. Ew. Even in days right before Japanese Prime Minister Abe dined there. Watch him go home and get food poisoning. Anyway, so we, you know, they conveniently don't talk about those kind of missions. Like this one from the Washington Post, dated today. U.S.-led coalition accidentally bombed Syrian allies, killing 18. And there's a picture. I can show the picture again, maybe. Yeah, here's the picture. You see a soldier not looking very happy, and the caption reads, a Syrian Democratic Forces fighter rests near destroyed airplane parts at Tabqa military airport after taking control of it from Islamic State fighters. What's this about, you're asking? Well, aircraft from a U.S.-led coalition accidentally bombed friendly Syrian forces fighting the Islamic State in northern Syria on Tuesday, killing 18. The Pentagon tells us today. The April 11th bombing marks the worst confirmed friendly fire incident in the nearly three-year-old war against the terrorist group. Was the White House not going to tell us about this? I did watch Spicy's abridged press briefing today. That's the sound that I opened the show with after hearing Bob Marley singing about all the trouble in the world. That clip was from that press briefing. Funny, I didn't hear a word about this. Actually, not funny. But the Washington Post continues. The coalition said in a statement that the airstrike was requested by, quote, partnered forces near the town of Tabqua, who accidentally targeted a group of Kurdish and Arab fighters known as the Syrian Democratic Forces, or SDF. The partnered forces believed that the SDF's position belonged to ISIS, the statement said. The general leadership of SDF, in coordination with international coalition, will investigate the reasons behind the accident in order to prevent it from happening again. Yeah, good luck with that. Because you got the gang who can't shoot straight in charge. These people don't know what the fuck they're doing. They don't know what the fuck they're doing. Do I need to repeat that again? I'm just I'm speechless. I'm not the only one who's speechless because, you know, in one of the clips that you'll hear in just a couple of minutes in today's What's News segment, Anderson Cooper goes speechless on us because it's insane. There's this headline from the International Business Times dated today, just not too long ago. Google searches for World War III hit all-time high. Panic and uncertainty strike as people seek answers over U.S. and North Korea tension. Donald Trump, in his quest to get the attention off of the possible Russian collusion, and by the way, there's a new story today. Let me see if I can't find this one. Here you go, from The Guardian. Sources close a source close to the investigation into President Donald Trump's campaign and its ties to Russia say that there is now, quote, specific, concrete, and corroborative evidence, end quote, that individuals within Trump's immediate orbit coordinated with Russian intelligence operatives during the election. This comes from The Guardian, people. The Guardian said today that the UK's government communications headquarters, GCHQ, that's, by the way, who Dump wanted, you know, shouted out and said, or someone in Dump's orbit, said that they were, that they had given information. Remember the whole story about GCHQ? Anyway. The Guardian said today that the GCHQ has been watching the Trump camp since late 2015, having noted suspicious, quote, interactions between Trump associates and well-known Russian agents. GCHQ passed the information it had uncovered along to U.S. intelligence agencies as part of the routine exchange of information, and for the next 6 months, until the summer of 2016, U.S. intelligence agencies were receiving information about the contacts from European agencies in Germany, Estonia, and Poland. More information came to U.S. hands from members of the Five Eyes Alliance that includes the U.S., the U.K., Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. The Guardian continued, it's understood that GCHQ was at no point carrying out a targeted operation against Trump or his team or proactively seeking information. The alleged conversations were picked up by chance as part of routine surveillance of Russian intelligence assets. Over several months, different agencies targeting the same people began to see a pattern of connections that were flagged to intelligence officials in the U.S. So this kind of shit has been going on. And obviously, Dump wants you to stop looking at that and look over here. Meanwhile, he keeps reversing himself. The Washington Post says, do I still have that article open? Shoot, I may have closed that one. I have a similar one from the Huffington Post that says Trump reverses himself on six major issues in 2 days. Again, this is to give us all whiplash. And in fact, Anderson Cooper said just that. Again, you'll hear it in What's News in just a moment. It's like they want to keep us going, look here, no, look there, no, look there, no, look there, no, look there. Oh, and now we'll drop the mother of all bombs. This is what they're telling us, the largest non-nuclear bomb ever dropped in combat operations. Now, there's a larger MOAB. This is the MOAB 43. There was a MOAB 50-something, which still has not been used. But give Trump a chance. He'll get to it. Yeah. This one here, U.S. forces used their largest non-nuclear bomb for the first time in combat today, striking, so they say, an Islamic State target in Afghanistan's Nangarhar province around 7:30 p.m. local time. The strike was carried out, as I told you from the official statement, as part of ongoing efforts to defeat ISIS-K in Afghanistan in 2017. The military objective was to drop the bomb, quote, and get it over and done with and get the ISIS forces killed off. That quote attributed to Barbara Starr, CNN's Pentagon correspondent. I just don't know where to go from here. It's one thing after another with this administration who just doesn't know what the fuck it's doing. Brandon Friedman, B. Friedman, D.C., tweeted, with no strategy, Trump has, in 1 week, attacked the Syrian government, sent a carrier strike group to North Korea, and dropped the largest non-nuclear weapon in history. Barbara Lee, Congresswoman Barbara Lee, in response to a Hill tweet about this weapon being dropped, writes or tweeted, Afghanistan bombing shows dangerous implications of Congress relinquishing war-making decisions. We must repeal the 2001 AUMF, that's the Authorization for Use of Military Force, immediately. That is how Obama kept bombing, kept carrying out his drone strikes, and how Dump is now doing it. They're all doing it under the 2001 AUMF, the Authorization for Use of Military Force, that Congress approved in the wake of 9/11. Remember, that was Al-Qaeda we were targeting. That was Osama bin Laden, who is dead. He is dead. I don't think anyone's contesting that. He's dead. And yet, here we are. Here we are. There's, to quote Bob Marley again, so much trouble in the world. Mother of all bombs, motherfucker. That's all I can say. All right. If you want to call in, if you want to weigh in on this, the phone lines are open. We're going to get to Howie Klein at the bottom of the hour, but we will take a break right now and check in with what's news for the rest of what's going on in Trumpville, shall we? Get the news
today. It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network. Did you ever have to make up your mind
and pick up on one and leave the other behind? It seems as if the 45th occupant of the Oval Office is having some problems. Did you ever have to
make up your mind? Today, President Trump making a 180 on so many of the statements he made during the campaign, it was enough to give the White House whiplash.
Let's start with NATO. Throughout the campaign, and as recently as March 22nd, Trump declared,
NATO is obsolete. It was 67 years, or it's over 60 years old. It is many countries, doesn't cover terrorism, okay? It covers the Soviet Union, which is no longer in existence. And NATO has to either be rejiggered, rechanged, you know, changed for the better.
A quick aside.
For the record, NATO did respond to terrorism, and NATO forces have fought and died in Afghanistan.
But back to the bigger issue. In a news conference Wednesday with NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, he flipped.
The Secretary General and I had a productive discussion about what more NATO can do. I said it was obsolete. It's no longer obsolete.
Next up, China.
China, which has been ripping us off, the greatest abuser in the history of this country. I'm going to instruct my Treasury Secretary to label China a currency manipulator, the greatest in the world.
Feel the vibe from here to Asia. Dip trip, Just 1 week after his Mar-a-Lago summit with the Chinese president, Donald Trump retracted one of his key repeated campaign promises. In an interview with the Wall Street Journal, Mr. Trump said his administration won't label China a currency manipulator in a report due this week. They're not currency manipulators, Mr. Trump said. Literally the exact opposite of what he said repeatedly ad nauseum on the campaign trail. When the Wall Street Journal asked about his complete flip-flop, Mr. Trump said the reason he's changed his mind on one of his signature campaign promises is that China hasn't been manipulating its currency for months, and because taking the step now could jeopardize his talks with Beijing on confronting the threat of North Korea.
By the way,
no one said it would be easy.
Trump is now realizing that being president is hard work.
President Trump said in the Wall Street Journal today that after listening to the Chinese president explain the history of China and North Korea for about 10 minutes, he, quote, realized it's not so easy. I mean, is that... I really am speechless. I don't know why I'm reacting like this.
But he said the same thing about health care.
Well, I know. Yes, of course. It's exactly what he said about health care.
No one said it'd be this hard.
Nobody knew that health care could be so complicated.
That nobody knew health care could be so complicated. But you know what? Actually, a lot of people did. In fact, pretty much everybody knew it was really, really complicated.
All right. Now, what about Syria and Assad? In more than a dozen tweets in 2013 and 2014, Trump consistently opposed U.S. military action and urged then-President Barack Obama against launching air attacks on Syria for allegedly deploying chemical weapons.
So I've watched Assad, and I've watched a little bit on the other side. The problem is the other side of Assad, we have no idea who they are. They probably are ISIS. I'm saying... are we better off with Assad? We have no idea who these people are. What are we doing? Why are we involved?
Yet just days after another chemical attack in Syria, Dump not only mocked Obama for inaction after declaring a red line, he launched his own airstrike.
Tonight I ordered a targeted military strike on the airfield in Syria from where the chemical attack was launched. It is in this vital national security interest of the United States to prevent and deter the spread and use of deadly chemical weapons.
We can bomb the world to pieces, but we can't bomb it into peace.
When he was just a citizen, Trump consistently criticized President Obama for an occasional golf outing.
I love golf. I think it's one of the greats, but I don't have time. 250 rounds, that's more than a guy who plays on the PGA Tour plays.
Obama ought to get off the golf course and get down there.
Everything's executive order, because he doesn't have enough time, because he's playing so much golf, he doesn't have enough time to convince Congress to do it.
So I have the greatest stuff, but you know what? And I love golf, but if I were in the White House, I don't think I'd ever see Turnberry again. I just want to stay in the White House and work my ass off.
And I like to play golf. You know, I'm a good golfer, believe it or not.
Now that he's president, he seems to have conveniently forgotten what he said so often. By the way, since his inauguration in January, Trump has spent 7 of 13 weekends at his private club in Palm Beach, Florida. According to NBC News estimates, by Sunday, Trump will have spent 28% of his term traveling to or staying at Mar-a-Lago. And of his first 81 days in office, he spent 17 of them at a golf course, compared to 0 for Obama and Bush and 3 for Bill Clinton. And finally, about his Russian friends, first he likes them.
And we're going to have a great relationship with Putin and Russia.
Now, not so much.
Right now, we're not getting along with Russia at all. We may be at an all-time low in terms of relationship with Russia.
Did you ever have to make up your...
I hope you enjoy these What's News reports. Please keep in mind that my work is 100% listener supported, so please consider a donation. Visit NicoleSandler.com, the podcast, the blog, and information on supporting the show.
I would bomb the shit out of them. ISIS is making a tremendous amount of money because
can't
they
can't afford
oil
a monthly donation.
Areas of oil that they took away.
Is that what's getting you down, Bunky?
I would bomb
but
the shit out of them.
Maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
All right. right, I'm back. We'll get Howie Klein in a few minutes. But I thought what I would do before the news of the big bomb hit this morning, there was something else going on. But I got to tell you, I'm reading Twitter. There's some amazing stuff that's crossing my timeline. Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, tweeted out, Russia says its version of the mother of all bombs, nicknamed father of all bombs, is four times stronger than MOAB. My mother bomb is bigger than your mother bomb. Joy Reid retweeted it and said it's like the world is being ruled by sixth grade boys. Sadly, you're right. Tim Wise, who I adore, a great writer, an educator on issues surrounding racism, wrote, oh, lovely. I got to tell you what I just saw. I'm sure glad that war-happy Democrat didn't win. She'd have bombed people, unlike that America First isolationist Trump, said idiots. Somebody just tweeted out my YouTube channel link and said, spam this bitch's chat. Yeah. KGB agent Keck, K-E-K, whose Twitter handle is at ChevyBoy271. After the show, I will report this person to Twitter. In fact, I think I'll do it now. Quote tweet, at Twitter, please delete this person's account. They're trying to get my chat spammed. I know VT Blom is on the on the case in the YouTube chat room. Sorry. Hey, I just speak the truth. You know, that person is like this one, somebody who goes by the name of Tinker on Twitter, who tweeted at Katie Turr, who has turned into quite a good journalist, I believe. I remember her first interview with Dump when he came down the steps or the escalator at Mar-a-Lago at Trump Tower. And I thought, who is this girl who was saddled with having to cover Dump? And she grew into a good journalist. This person, Tinker, at WTinker1Young, tweeted at her, at Katie Turr NBC, just want people to know how much of a rotten C-T is, if we don't know what word they're not spelling out. You really are. You're a pathetic, Y-O-U-R, another misspelling. You're a pathetic piece of shit and hope you get hit by a bus. What a nice, loving nation in which we live. Secular Talk, Kyle Kalinske tweeted out, I bet this colossal bomb we dropped on Afghanistan will solve everything. Not a single person with a functioning brain. So it goes like that. Trump calls massive bomb drop on ISIS target in Afghanistan, quote, another successful event. Laffey says, prove it. Yeah. And by the way, Trump won't say if he signed off on this mother of all bombs against ISIS. You know, he's told the military people, his generals, if you will, to just go ahead and do what they're going to do because this is too much for him to, you know, think about. So he's just giving them control. This is our world, people. If you need some comic relief earlier in the day, you know, thinking that I need some other words other than dump to call the orange thing sitting in the Oval Office. And so asked people on Facebook to weigh in with other name substitutions. So we got Dolt 45, Donald Douche, let's see, so-called president, Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, Twitler, Orange Menace, Cheetolini, reputed president, Orange Yam, Big Shot Baby Hands, Trumple Thin Skin, that's a good one, Scrotus for so-called ruler of the United States, Scrotus, 45, Shit Gibbon, that works, let's see, oh, somebody said I called him dump in a thread full of dumb wingers, so one of them sprang furiously to his defense with the usual, all liberals are cruel name callers. Yeah. Let's see. Agent Orange, Mango Mussolini, Benedict Donald, Cheetolini, we got that one all right. I love Colt 45. Fuckface, Captain Marmalade, 44.9. There are a lot of replies on this thread. Orange Man Baby, Scrotus McShitgibbon, Twitler already said that, Der Drumpf, Liar in Chief, Donnie, This Idiot. A lot of people are using Drumpf since that was his family name, but he doesn't like it. Child Predator slash Child Molester, Predator in Chief, Contradick. That works. Conmanda. All right. The administration is the Cult 45. Vulgar Talking Yam, that courtesy of Charles Pierce. Make It Up as He Goes Along. All right. The Dumpster. I do like The Dumpster because, you know, it works. Hair Cheeto. Oh, someone said President. Isn't that sweet? Cinnamon Hitler. Dumpsolini. Somebody put a troll doll with his face on it. That works. Tangerine Tiny Handed Fuck Whistle. Yeah, we could go on like this for a while, but you know what? I've got to get Howie Klein on the line, so I don't want to eat into Howie's.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're going to love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Yes, Howie Klein, the man behind DownWithTyranny.com and the Blue America Pack, joins us each Friday or Thursday, sorry, wishful thinking, to talk politics and more. Hi, Howie.
Hello, Nicole, and it feels like Friday.
I wish it was Friday. So we've dropped the mother of all bombs. Isn't that nice to know?
Right, and very nice little area. And they said, oh, but it doesn't matter, it's rural. The whole country is rural. I mean, it's a rural country,
yeah.
a rural society, and I'm sure they wound up killing some people.
Oh, I'm sure they did, too, and of course, they won't talk about it. I mean, it's just breaking news today, thank you, Washington Post, that the U.S.-led coalition accidentally bombed Syrian allies, killing 18 people on Tuesday. Funny, we don't hear about that.
Just collateral damage.
Yeah, just a few people, no big deal. But we're gonna drop the biggest bomb ever. So don't look over there where the Washington Post or the Guardian is reporting that there are now specific, concrete, and corroborative evidence that individuals within Trump's immediate orbit coordinated with Russian intelligence operatives during the election. So
presumably one of them is his son-in-law.
Yeah, right. So the Guardian is breaking that story. So the administration goes, ooh, let's pull out that MOAB thing. Hey, what's the mother? We're going to have fun with this. And this is an instance of don't look over there. Look over here. No, look over there. No, look over there. It's amazing. Amazing. So, Howie Klein, I sent you an email earlier that I got from listener Julie. Julie lives in California, in the Fresno area, in Devin Nunes's district. And she sent me an email. She said, Howie Klein just tweeted regarding money to defeat Devin Nunes, my congressman. Can you help me find out more? My Indivisible group is on it, and she linked to it. She said, there have been meetings here to try to find an opponent. Has somebody jumped in the race to run against Devin Nunes?
I'll tell you about that.
Okay.
So what she's responding to was a tweet that I did because one of my neighbors knocked on my door, said he's been reading Down with Tyranny, and asked me if it would help if he wrote me a $100,000 check for the PAC to go after Nunes. So I said, well, we need to find a candidate first.
Ah.
And we a little bit about that and what needs to be done legally for that kind of a donation and what it would mean. He made it clear that that would just be a down payment and he'd be willing to put more money into it besides the first 100,000. So that, and I tweeted that. She reacted. Ah. She retweeted me as well, as a matter of fact. And now here's the thing. The guy who ran last time wasn't, I don't know him at all. I never spoke with him, and but he wasn't a very good candidate. He didn't even raise the $5,000 that you need to file with the FEC. So there was, so really, you know, can you really take someone like that seriously? He wants to run again. Then a friend of mine in Congress told me that he's 90% there with a very good candidate who wants to run. So that's another possibility. Now, 90% there is almost, means he's almost certain to run, but it's not quite there yet. And I've been asking this congressman, and he keeps telling me it's going to happen, it's going to happen, but so far it hasn't. This has been going on for over a month already. Then Ted Lieu is the vice chair, the regional vice chair for the West Coast for the DCCC, and I know he's very, very eager to find somebody as well, although I heard from his chief of staff yesterday that they don't have any clear candidate in mind yet. So
the hunt is on now, for somebody now, great, right?
Now, this woman, Julie, and I think she's in a group that is holding a town hall meeting. Now, Nunez, of course, won't go to a town hall meeting. He absolutely refuses to. And so this group, this indivisible group, I think this is the one, is holding one themselves. So I was thinking of going up to that. I think it's in about a week.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yes, and seeing if I can meet some people there. And, you know, for me, I have some very, very specific things that I need to see in a candidate before I'm going to get that involved in a race like this. And one of them, you know, aside from the fact that I'm looking for someone who is actually a true progressive, a populist type who cares about working families and talks about real issues. So aside from that, which we look for in every district, in a district like Nunez's district, California 22, we definitely need to find somebody who's in it for the long run, not someone who thinks he's just going to march in there and let Nunez defeat himself because of Trump and Putingate. That's not the kind of candidate I want. I want to find a candidate who is willing to put in all the work necessary to win this cycle, knowing in the back of his mind or her mind that they might not win until 2020. This, you know, Democrats haven't run candidates against Nunez. He's never had a race. People there aren't used to running Democrats, working for Democrats, volunteering for Democrats. It's just, there's no infrastructure. It's a real mess. So it may be, and most likely will be, unless there's just this enormous tsunami against Trump, which is possible. I mean, we saw in Kansas the other night, there was a 20.3%, I think it was 20.3%, it was a little, just over 20% swing from how Trump did in November to how the Democrat did
on Tuesday
in Kansas' 4th District, the Wichita area.
Right. That was a huge thing.
Across the country, if they can get a swing like 20%, that means over 120 Republicans will be defeated. Now, in a case like that, then all the rules are tossed out and everything is, everything that you know about politics doesn't matter anymore. It's just a tsunami and everything gets wiped away in its wake. And in a case like that, Nunez's district can be a one-cycle district. In reality, unless that happens, you can't ever count on that, unless that happens, we're looking at a minimum of two strong cycles. And from what I can tell, 2018 and 2020 cycle, both those cycles are going to be strong for Democrats. So I want to find a candidate who's going to commit to running in both cycles. And that's not always easy.
No. And look, you've done this before. We can talk about Donna Edwards is a good example. Donna Edwards was a Blue America candidate. She didn't win her first time out. It took her two tries, right?
Right. Donna, two tries. Alan Grayson,
right.
Two tries.
Yep.
Most most progressive candidates, it does take two tries. When they're running when you're running in a blue district, if you manage somehow to win the nomination and you're running in a blue district, again, you win one time. Excuse me. But in these Republican districts like this, like in Orlando, no one remembered the last time there had been a Democrat in downtown Orlando before Alan Grayson.
Wow. And now that district
was a big deal for him to be able to go in there and do it even in two tries. In Donna's case, it was a little bit different because she went up against a conservative Democrat, a very, very corrupt conservative Democrat. But it's a different situation. They don't really have Republicans in that part of Maryland. So it's a different thing. Then you're talking about the Republican wing of the Democratic Party. But in effect, it's the same thing.
Right. No, it is. Well, and you have a piece up at Down with Tyranny that this gets to the crux, I think, of the matter. And one of the biggest problems with the Democratic Party. Look, next week, Bernie Sanders is coming to Miami. I was thrilled when I saw it. He only came down here once during the whole primary season. And he was in Miami, not Broward County, which is the bluest part of Florida. But he goes to Miami for whatever reason. They're doing it again. He's on this little mini tour with Keith Ellison and Tom Perez, the new chair of the DNC, trying to get, I guess, Bernie-crats to, sign on to the Democratic Party game plan, right? And look, he's trying to do more than that.
I mean, did you see him on Chris Hayes' show last night?
No.
He addressed what he's trying to do rather than what, people are saying he's trying to do. He talked a lot about stuff that made me feel kind of optimistic that he's going to be putting a lot of energy into trying to persuade the more establishment Democrats like Perez that what's needed is a 50-state strategy and a progressive agenda. And that, he made a very, very compelling case on Chris's show, and I think there's a YouTube up on it already now. You can watch it at MSNBC's
On their website,
Where they have all their videos stored. So in any case, it's the very, very end of the show, the last segment of Chris's show, and he makes the case that the Democrats can do really well in 2018 and beyond if they really practice the 50-state strategy and if they really go for being the party of the working class that's going to stand up to Wall Street and stand up to the 1%.
Right.
Now, it's not going to be easy, but Tom Perez is somebody sort of in between. He's not Debbie Wasserman Schultz or any kind of garbage like that, but he's also not Keith Ellison or Bernie, so they're going to have to work on him. And I got the impression that this little tour that you're talking about, because it's not just to Florida, by the way.
No, it's doing to red and purple states, right?
Red and purple.
Yep.
So I think that, the way I envision it, I'm trying to imagine Bernie working on Perez in such a way that Perez turns into more of a believer.
Well, I hope so. And Perez has been sounding good, but then you put up a post like you did yesterday at downwithtyranny.com. The DCCC is still recruiting ex-Republicans. And
remember, Perez is the DNC. It's
right.
Separate.
Exactly.
Right. So they're not the same. But yeah, the DCCC is there's nothing that you can do about that. You know that bomb, that Moab bomb,
yes,
that Trump used in Afghanistan today?
Yeah. Needs to drop on the DCCC.
That's the only thing you can do with the DCCC.
Right.
Literally, you would need that bomb. That's the only cure for the DCCC. There's nothing else that can be done. Their DNA is so fucked up from when Rahm Emanuel ran it that it's just the DNA is how to lose. That's it. They have it completely down. This is how you lose. Anything they touch is just turns to shit. And I'm afraid there's nothing that can be done about it. That the building that they're in has to be leveled and it has to be rebuilt from scratch. Not one brick from it should be used in it again.
Well,
everything
Ted Lieu,
about the DCCC is poison.
Except for Ted Lieu. Ted Lieu is in there, right?
Right. He's not part of that building. He was elected by members of Congress from the West Coast. Okay. He doesn't have anything to do. Really, does not have anything to do with them.
All right. Well, they knock down the main building, leave the annex with Ted Lieu standing alone, and let him rebuild from there, because that's what we need, right?
From L.A.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, obviously, I'm not really advocating anybody blow anything up. But the reality is that Nancy Pelosi has been really good for a lot of things, and we should all be pretty proud of the job on some levels that she's done. But several things that she's been really terrible at is picking DCCC chairman. She's picked all of them, starting with Rahm. They've all been failures. She doesn't understand what the DCCC is supposed to do and how they can do it. Paul Ryan wouldn't do a worse job than her. If they made him the guy who's in charge, he wouldn't do worse for the Democrats than Nancy Pelosi has done. That she should be taken out of that, not necessarily taken out of the leadership of the Democratic Party, that's a separate issue, but the part of the Democratic Party that has to do with the DCCC should have nothing to do with Nancy Pelosi. And until that happens, it's just going to be like a mess of an organization that will do more harm than good.
You know, I would guess that because she's from San Francisco, that if she would retire, you would have a whole slew of really good progressives standing up saying, I'll run. Unlike, you know, in Fresno, where it might be harder to find an enclave of progressive activism there.
Well, there are a lot of people in San Francisco who, of course, would want that job. The problem is, if she retires, it's not about San Francisco. If she retires, it's about who takes over the leadership of the Democratic Party. When you look at the three people who are sort of jockeying for that position, it goes from the worst possible person in the universe to someone even worse than that to someone even worse than that. That's how bad it is.
Yeah, that's the problem. We need to...
Are Steny Hoyer, widely considered, you know, the most lobbyist-oriented person who's ever set foot into Congress? Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who you and I have talked about on this show for years now. And then this guy named Joe Crowley from Queens, the Queens Democratic Party boss, who's usually thought of as Congress's most corrupt member.
Oh, my God. So Debbie Wasserman Schultz is still in leadership. And see, this is my problem going to this thing. And I'll go next week because Bernie's there. I hope it's kind of a town hall-y thing rather than just they talk at us. Because, you know, these are my concerns. I'd love to go all in and help promote it. But the party hasn't learned a damn thing from what happened last November. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz is sitting in the wings waiting for Nancy Pelosi to retire, thinking that she'll be the Democratic leader in the House, then, you know, I know I'll take my toys and go home, along with many millions of others who say, hell no.
Right. So she, a couple of years ago, before it all came out that she's helped to steal the nomination for Hillary, she was looked at as the person who would be the most likely to succeed Nancy.
Right.
If they could get rid of Hoyer. Remember Hoyer?
Hoyer's still there.
Right. Is a year older than Nancy, so there's no reason to think that Nancy is going to be gone necessarily before Hoyer.
Right.
So imagine we lose both of them somehow, and then Debbie was thought of as the most likely person to you know, you get elected to that position, and usually the way you get elected is by spreading around all the bribes that you get from corporations into your campaign war chest. She's really good at that. So in other words, Hoyer's really good at it too. And that's how you build loyalty and friendship. And then when you need those people to vote for you, then they vote for you. So she's been spreading around hundreds of thousands of dollars every year that she gets from the people who want to see her rise in power. Now, after she was nationally exposed as a crook and a thief during the presidential primaries, her stock went way down.
Yes.
So now the person who's most likely to succeed Nancy / Hoyer is Crowley, the former head of the New Dems. When you're a freshman and you want to get into the flow of cash from Wall Street,
mm-hmm.
you go right to Crowley, and Crowley will introduce you to the right people, or depending on how you look at it, the wrong people. and that's how it's done. He's Wall Street. I mean, he's not the only one, but he's absolutely at the top of the food chain when it comes to who are the guys you go to for your Wall Street cred to get in on all the bribery.
That's really disconcerting. And what we need is, and we talked about it with Alan Grayson, who was trying to get into leadership. Of course, now he's not in Congress at all. Ted Lieu is working his way in through the DCCC. We need the real progressives to muscle in there. I mean, I'm glad that Keith Ellison has a role in the DNC, yeah. but we need them in the party leadership, especially in the House.
Right. So Keith is in that line. Mark Pocan from Madison, right. Wisconsin is in that line. Ted is sort of getting in there. There are a few others, but they're light years behind the ones who have been building their power base for these year after year after year after year. All these backbenchers who you never hear about, you know, these garbage wastes of seats that are all from all over the country. They're just happy to get checks directed in their direction from Debbie Wasserman Schultz. I mean, who wants to go to the prison industry and the private prison industry and get money? I mean, that's disgusting. No Democrat would want to do that. But, of course, that's Debbie Wasserman Schultz's life. That's what
yeah.
she does.
Yep.
Debbie Wasserman Schultz is the kind of person that dives into a sewer and just feels like wonderful. I mean, she like loves it. She opens her mouth at the bottom of the sewer and feels like $1 million. And then she comes up and she hands out all that money to all these people who don't have to then do it. They don't have to get in that sewer because Debbie Wasserman Schultz has been in the sewer for them.
Right. And she's one of those. What they do, as you write in this piece that I mentioned before, the people there in the DCCC especially look for wealthy candidates who can self-finance, because that's a big thing with the Democrats now. That's why they liked Patrick Murphy, because he came from a rich family. They didn't care that he was actually a Republican who said, I'll switch my voter registration. Sure, I'll say I'm a Democrat. I'll still vote with the Republicans most of the time. We saw it happen in Washington State, where Darcy Berner was a great candidate, and she was beat out by this Microsoft woman who had a ton of money who could self-finance, and she's a new Dem or a blue dog. I mean, we have a lot of these fake Democrats, but even worse are they're trying to recruit people who were Republican. Charlie Crist is a great example. Charlie Crist, former governor of Florida, who, you know, had such ambition. He was the one who always saw him during the McCain-Obama campaign, was standing right behind John McCain because he wanted to be picked for VP. And then when he didn't get that, he's like, well, I don't want to be governor again. I'll run for the Senate. And, of course, he got demolished in the Tea Party wave by Marco Rubio. So then he comes back. He's like, okay, well, now I'm an independent. And then the Democratic Party sold its soul, if it had one, to him in exchange for his endorsement of Barack Obama at an event that I took my kid to down here. He showed his Democratic Party registration and he endorsed Obama, so that the Florida Democratic Party said, we'll get behind you, you know, in this run for the Senate. It's all bullshit. Charlie Crist is a Democrat like my dog is.
And remember, you're talking about Florida. You live in Florida.
Yes, I
but
do.
We can get people from anywhere in the country
yep.
to tell the same story about their state. No matter what state you go to, you find the DCCC recruiting Republicans to pretend and masquerade. They believe in this. When I was talking about their poisonous DNA, that's what I'm talking about. In their bones, and in the bricks in the building. That is part of it. Rahm Emanuel put it there. It's never going to go away. That building has to be demolished, and all those people, all those Cherry Bustos and Denny Heck and the whole lot of them, that's what they believe in. They believe in Republicans. They are self-loathing Democrats.
Right.
They hate Democrats. They hate everything the Democratic Party stands for. They shouldn't even be in the party. They should all go join the Republicans, which is what they are. I mean, you're talking about Charlie Crist in Florida, who's a freshman Democratic congressman this year, or Tom O'Halloran, who's a freshman Democratic congressman from Arizona. He was a Republican state legislator before he, you know, suddenly decided to make the switch, and now he's instantaneous Democrat. Guess what? They're voting almost three quarters of the time with the Republicans. So they're voting far more with Ryan than they are with the Democrats. That's who they are. When Paul Ryan or Kevin McCarthy or Trump talks about, oh, this wonderful bipartisan bill, they're talking about something that all the Republicans plus Charlie Crist voted for. That's what makes it bipartisan.
Right.
And we have them everywhere. And they're recruiting them now. They're still fucking recruiting these people.
Yeah. No, it's sickening. And you have another post up. How do you know when a candidate with a D next to his name isn't really a Democrat? And you're citing the special election in L.A. to fill the seat of the new attorney general in California.
Javier Becerra.
So there are ostensibly two Democrats who were the top two vote getters, because that's how you do it in California. And my God, some bomb keeps bomb sound effect keeps hijacking my.
Nicole, I'm losing you. I don't understand what's happening, but I'm not hearing you anymore.
Are you hearing me now?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Yeah, some bomb sound effect took over my computer. Don't ask me why. So in California, 34, where Javier Becerra is now the attorney general, there's a special election. You have the two top vote getters in the runoff who go in the general. They're both ostensibly two Democrats, but not really, right?
Right. Well, one of them, of course, is as good a Democrat as you're going to get.
Jimmy Gomez.
A guy named Jimmy Gomez, who's right. in the state legislature and has an incredible record of leadership, of getting things done, of, like, you know, actually going in and doing the right thing, not just voting right, but being a leader and bringing along more conservative Democrats and Republicans into doing the right thing. And that's what we're looking for, people like him. I mean, Jimmy is as good as it gets. So you've got him on the one hand, and the other guy is a guy named Robert Ahn, A-H-N, who was, until a couple of years ago, a Republican, a rich, rich Republican.
Right.
So suddenly he decides he wants to get involved with politics. Well, if you want to be involved with politics in Los Angeles, you can't really, if you want to be serious, you can't be a Republican. So he said, oh, I'll change my registration. So he changed his registration. But as in the story that you read, I hope you saw that mailer that I used in the story. In the bottom of the mailer, it says paid for by Robert Ahn for Congress. That's
yes.
an official, that's an official,
his campaign,
company. It's yeah. not a company, but that's his, that's a registered FEC mark, and no, you can't just use it. I mean, that's what it
right.
is. And what it's on the bottom of is a letter from the former chairman of the Republican Party of California, who's a lunatic, this guy Sean Steele, talking about, disparagingly about the district, as, you know, some kind of inner city district or something, whatever he called it, and then saying, if we don't elect on, you're going to wind up with a left-wing fanatic.
Yes, that's what it says. Please don't waste your vote.
Democratic primary.
Yeah.
And this is what on the former Republican
wow.
is sending out to the Republicans in the district, telling them to, you know, yes, on is a Democrat now, wink, 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 make sure you vote for him.
Yeah.
From Sean Steele, the former chairman of the Republican Party.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, so you've really got to pay attention. Just because someone has a D next to his or her name doesn't mean that they're actually a Democrat. With that, Howie Klein, we are once again out of time. What? Say it.
Oh, we're out of time.
Yeah,
okay, we'll talk more next week.
Okay, sounds good. Howie Klein, again, find his blog at downwithtyranny.com. The Blue America PAC is up and running. They've got some great candidates already for special elections. Georgia 6 is this coming Tuesday. And then some candidates for 2018 as well. I'll post links to the two stories we talked about and to the Blue America page on my blog at NicoleSandler.com so you can help out. As always, thank you, Howie.
Thank you, Nicole. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. So, game on. The thing what happened in Kansas was so close. We say goodbye to the Progressive Voices channel. That's why that little gap. Kansas was so close. It was like a 6-point gap when Trump won in that district by 27 points. Change is in the air, people. Just don't let them get to you. We need to hold firm, be strong, stick together, and vote. I'll see you tomorrow. Boca Britt will be here, so it'll be a fun Friday. Thanks again for listening. And there goes my phone. See you tomorrow. I think, come on. Oh, Brad Friedman doesn't want to play, does he? Hold on. We're going to do it this way.
It's Thursday, April 13, 2017.
All of Florida is still under a state of emergency right now, and at this hour, some 100 fires are still burning.
State of Florida battles unprecedented early wildfire season. Court upholds California's cap-and-trade emissions trading system. Trump's Bureau of Land Management to prioritize fossil fuel extraction. Now's your chance to weigh in on EPA regulations.
I'm in favor of them.
Plus,
iceberg, run ahead!
An iceberg armada is invading the Arctic.
Oh, come on, icebergs. Don't give Trump any ideas. All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Even corporations, yes, corporations, are speaking out against Trump's climate policy. Levi's, Staples, The Gap, Exxon, M&M's said, it's gotten so bad, our product melts in your hand.
That is bad. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, the California drought is apparently over, but it looks like it's just moved over to Florida.
Yeah, Florida Governor Rick Scott on Tuesday declared a state of emergency across the entire state to free up state and federal resources to fight an outbreak of destructive wildfires. More than 100 active wildfires are now burning across Florida and have scorched nearly 70,000 acres over just the last month. The wildfires have forced evacuations and road closures and have already burned 250% more acreage during just the first 3 months of this year than during the same period last year. And it's expected to get worse as drought conditions and lightning frequency increases in the state during the coming warm months.
That's okay. Florida will soon be underwater and all the fires will be out.
But good news in California, a state appeals court has upheld California's statewide cap and trade system for reducing greenhouse gas emissions. The court rejected arguments from the fossil fuel industry and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce that the market-based system was an illegal tax. The court instead upheld the state's authority to operate the voluntary market-based system that reduces emissions by allowing polluters to buy and trade pollution allowances.
It's a voluntary system?
Yes.
And yet the fossil fuel industry and the Chamber of Commerce were fighting this voluntary system?
Yes, they were.
Amazing.
The Trump administration Bureau of Land Management will shift its focus to accelerating fossil fuel development on public lands. That's according to a leaked internal memo, which orders agency employees to prioritize and streamline leasing and permitting for coal, mining, and oil and gas projects, and Trump's proposed wall on the Mexican border.
Why don't they just change the name from Bureau of Land Management to Bureau of Land Sales?
They might just do that, because the BLM right now is wasting no time in reflecting that focus on extraction. The main photo on the BLM's website was changed from a family hiking on their beautiful public lands to a photo of a massive wall of coal being mined. The photo was changed after public outcry, but interestingly, that photo of the coal mine was a mine owned by Peabody Energy, which just came out of bankruptcy proceedings, sticking taxpayers with most of their toxic mine cleanup bill.
Sounds like the Trump administration is picking winners and losers here when it comes to coal.
Well, now you have a chance, though, to weigh in on which EPA regulations you'd like to have survive the Trump administration. The EPA has opened up a public comment period where you can weigh in on Trump's executive orders requiring federal agencies to identify which regulations will be repealed, replaced, or modified. You can make your voice heard. The deadline is May 15th. We have all the info at our website, greennews.bradblog.com.
Or you can just go to epa.gov and find your way there.
In the Arctic, global warming is creating new and unusual problems because of a record loss of sea ice, changes in ocean currents, and disruption of wind and weather patterns. The Arctic is now seeing an armada of icebergs, an iceberg swarm threatening shipping lanes, literally, where on average there would be about 80 icebergs this time of year. There are now 450. Something that U.S. Coast Guard Arctic commanders say they've never seen anything like it.
Why are there so many icebergs? Because the oceans are warmer and these ice chunks are melting and breaking away?
Pretty much, yes.
Also amazing.
Finally, a sign of the times. A museum in Kentucky that documents the history of the coal industry is installing solar panels on its roof to save money, $8,000 to $10,000 a year. The irony of a coal museum turning to clean and cheap solar for energy was not lost on climate hawks who say that's the only place coal belongs, in the ground or in a museum.
And from what I understand, the folks in this tiny, almost gone coal town in Kentucky are not upset at all about saving $8,000 or $10,000 a year. And all of a sudden, they're fascinated by this whole solar thing.
Imagine that.
Indeed. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website before it burns down or gets hit by an iceberg at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.